All right, perfect. So far since morning, we have seen a lot of management folks, sales, marketing, partners, customers, talking about Windows Server 2016, right? So from now on, we are going to talk only technology. So the moment that you have been waiting for is getting started now. And think of this session like a sneak peek into what we have lined up in the afternoon. We have 8 great sessions lined up for you in 2 different tracks so that you can concentrate or you can pick and choose which session you want to attend and go ahead and attend those, right? So this session is primarily about Demo Fest. Basically, we are going to show a bunch of demo. Myself, Ravi Shankar, I'm a cloud solution architect with CloudFlex Consulting. And my friend here, Reng Kwan, he will be taking over from me at the second portion of the Demo Fest, and he'll be showing a whole bunch of features, right? So let me get started with a quick feature that you know, probably you might have, might not have heard about. So just a quick show of hands, how many of you heard about Nano Server? Just a quick show of hand. Name anyone, right? I see 1, maybe 2, 3 hands. All right, that's good. So this is your opportunity to learn what Nano Server is. So anybody who's familiar with Windows Server 2008, 2012, 2012 R2, right, you know that Microsoft released a mode of installation called as Core Server, right? So basically, the philosophy is that everything that you need to install is there in the server. You pick and choose install. Before that, everything came installed by default. So with core installation, you choose what you need to install. In Nano Server, we go up a step ahead. So basically what we do is that we start with the Windows Server kernel and just enough components to get started. So you've put the Nano Server in the hardware and it will run as an operating system. But then, if you want certain features, right, let's say Hyper-V or failover clustering, file services, anything that you want, you need to add it at the time of creating the image. Because of this type of handling, the whole image itself is so small. Because it's so small, the footprint, as we call it, or the attack surface, is so small that it is secure, the most secure server at the market right now, okay? And since it is smaller, it runs very, very fast. And also because of its size, it can free up a lot of resources for the virtual machines or any other applications that it might run so that you don't need to worry about allocating 4 GB or 6 GB or 8 GB for just the operating system alone. So without wasting time, let me quickly show you what I mean. All right, so here's a Nano Server virtual machine image that I have created. All right, so as you can see, the image itself is roughly about 700 MB. Now this image contains Hyper-V role, failover clustering, and file services. Now, if I had not added those features in this image, it would have been somewhere around 480 MB, right? That's the base image size that we are talking about. So, all right. Okay, so let me show you how do we go about. Let me show you an interface of a Nano Server. So when you connect to a Nano Server, right, in a traditional server, you might expect login screen, GUI, all those things. But Nano Server, just this. So you basically get username, password, and the domain. That's it. Now, there is a surprise here as well. Once you log in, right, you might expect to see a lot of options. But no, you're in for a surprise. The philosophy behind creating nano server is that you never have to sit in front of the server in a server room. And to that effect, if you see here where I'm pointing, do you see the name of the console? It's called as a recovery console. So basically, you connect to this console only when you need to fix some issues, not on a daily basis. Once you set it up, you are supposed to manage this server remotely, which is what I'm going to show you in a minute. All right? So in this screen, you can see a bunch of information like computer name, what is the user account that I've logged in with, the operating system version, date, time, etc. And you can also see the default options. Now, this is a plain image that I have created. This is not the image that I showed you initially. This is a plain out-of-the-box image without any roles. So out-of-the-box, you can see the networking features. All right, so if I scroll down a bit, it shows me that it has one network card, and these are the IP address settings. Now, if I want to change those settings, I can do so by using control keys and other keys. So basically, no mouse options. So let me zoom back so that it becomes easier. All right, sorry about that. OK, so let me scroll down and show you the options that we have. Anything that you do, no more mouse with the nano server. It's all arrow keys, and the instructions are right there at the bottom. So I'm going to hit Enter, and I can switch between IPv4 settings using F11. I can change the settings if I want, or if I don't want, I can escape again, and then come back to the home screen. I can change the firewall rules. I can change the WinRM settings. Now, this is all fine out of the box, right? But you're interested in knowing, what if I want to install a bunch of roles in it? All right, how do I manage it? The first management tool that you need to consider when you are managing a nano server is Server Manager. Just like any other Windows server, you would start with the Server Manager. In this screen, if you can see, I have two servers that I have already added, NanoServer 01 and 02. And I can manage it like any other server. Right-click, I can do add roles and features. I can do whatever options that are available. As you can see, I have two roles installed in them already, failover clustering and Hyper-V Manager, which means that I can manage the server using Hyper-V Manager as well as failover cluster manager as well. So let me show you what I mean. So these two nano servers, right, they have virtual machines running inside of them. So if I go here, this is the first nano server, and this is the second nano server. Now, this is the second tool of choice for Hyper-V management, and I can just manage it like any other server. For example, if I want to connect to this server, all I need to do is just double tap on that, and I will be able to connect to this virtual machine and manage the settings just like any other server. All right? The second option, the second role that I had installed into the server is Failover Cluster Manager. So this Failover Cluster Manager contains a cluster that is made up of two nano servers, nano server 1 and 2. And just like any other cluster, I can install an application. I can do whatever application hosting inside of these nano servers that are supported. The third tool of choice is PowerShell. So if you like PowerShell, if you are a Linux background guy, or if you are a DevOps guy who likes scripting and logging in remotely instead of using GUI, you can log into the PowerShell screen, and you can connect using a remote PowerShell option. So this is, as you can see, I've already logged into the nano server, and I can just do my regular operations. But the thing to note in a nano server is that, unlike a full-blown server, you don't get to see all the features. If I run this get command commandlets in a full-blown server, this would have been running for at least next 2 minutes. But since this is nano server, there are not many command modules that are there. All right, so this is just a sub package. So I'm going to stop this. I'm going to go back to the server manager, and I'm going to show you what I mean by the differences. So I go to add roles, I click next, and choose the nano server that I want to install and work with. As you can see, the Hyper-V server is there, and the file server is there. And if I click next, I will see the failover clustering and a few other features. Out of the box, the features and roles that I add will only be the ones that I will be seeing. Nothing else will be showing, all right? Unlike that, if I go to a full-blown server here, as you might have guessed, I can see all the roles and features, all right? So that's the difference again. That is why this nano server model is more secure by default, all right? Let me show you the nano server screen for this particular server. Give me one moment. What you saw previously was a plain vanilla nano server, which did not have any roles in it. This nano server, however, has Hyper-V failover clustering and file services. And as you can readily see on the login screen, it has the VM host option. If I go inside that, it will show me the switch, the Hyper-V switch option, which I can go in and check. Or I can go into the guest VM option, which will show me the information of the virtual machine that is running. It shows that, you know, I have one virtual machine running with this configuration. All right, so this is the difference between a regular server and a nano server. So this is just an introduction. My colleague from Microsoft, Quan, will be presenting a deep dive session on various other features of Windows Server, including Nano Server, in track one, right after the lunch refreshment break. And with that, I hand it over to my friend, Renkwan. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ravi. So my name is Renkwan. I'm from a solution consultant from PeeringOne. So Ravi shared a lot as nano server and a core server, that nano server is the preferred way to deploy Windows Server these days, right? It's small, it's scalable, and it's secure. So there's a lot of nano servers deployment, such as software-defined storage based on nano server, nano Hyper-V server. So there's a lot of it is coming along. So I will tap on that, and on top of that, I will show that how to build a software-defined data center based on Windows Server 2016 technology and System Center. Right, so let me start with it. So as what William shared over the previous sessions, that Storage Spaces Direct is the foundation of a hyperconverge. Right, so let's start with hyperconverge itself. So software-defined storage with Storage Spaces Direct, it can go as small as 2 nodes as a startup, right, and it scale all the way up to 16 per cluster. And you can scale a multiple server, multiple cluster to go as much as you want. And as you grow, you can have more IOPS, right? More storage and bigger performance along your way. So what it essentially does is pull all the local disks on the server. So you can see the server here, right? It's 2U, 1 node, but at the back, it actually has 4 servers. So all the disks in front are actually pulled together as a high availability storage, as a cluster shared volume. So we can have SSD, we can have NVMe, we can have SATA disk combined together with the tiering, enterprise-grade tiering built in. So the best part of it is it's set up within 15 minutes, right, to set up this hyperconverge. So I'll show you a short demo, right, of what how to set up a hyperconverge. So I have a small setup with 2 nodes. These 2 nodes, there's a reference architecture from HP, from Dell, from Lenovo. You can check out on their booth. they can have 50,000 IOPS just from two nodes configuration itself. So how to set it up is very easy. First of all, we create a failover cluster among two servers, right? This is simple, straightforward, which is happening on all the Hyper-V cluster and all the usual cluster that you have. So we'll set it up quickly. Right, then I'll give it a name. D5, okay, next. So I'll just create a cluster. So once I create a cluster, it's just a normal cluster. What I need to do is to run a single line of command to pull all the disks together into a usable disk space. So while waiting for this to form, let's give it a couple of seconds. So it's good to have a 10 gig backbone because all the storage replications is happening across the nodes and all this. So just refer to the reference architecture, you can get the performance you guaranteed from the hardware vendor, right? So once the cluster is done, let's check on the storage pool here. So by default, it's empty, right? Let's see how the commands built into it. So this is the single command, just enable dash cluster storage spaces direct. That's how simple it is. So this command, it depending on number of nodes and number of disks to configure, it takes as fast as 2 minutes. As what I calculated before. So this will get you a no-SAN environment where you can scale very easily as a service provider or as a large enterprise, you can start small at 2 nodes, 4 nodes, or even 6 nodes and grow accordingly, right? So starting a health provider. So what you can see, I actually have 2 disks on each server, and I have a total of 4 disks. So they claim all the disks and build it as a pool and show me a usable space. Right. So just to give you a perspective of 50,000 IOPS, may not seem a lot, but essentially the normal SATA spindle disk give you somewhere around 70 to 150 per disk. Right. After we pull all this, you get 50,000. So there's a performance difference when you go to SSD and NVMe configurations. That's a lot faster than a general SAN configuration, right? Cool. So starting up, just give the server some time, right? It's creating the pool now. So should be done anytime. So that's how fast the line of code gets. After that, you just go back to your failover cluster manager, and you'll see the disk of 200 gig, which is essentially all my physical disks on across two servers and pulled together as one, right? And the third step now. So the third step essentially just create a virtual disk and make it into a cluster shared volume. So just right click and create a new virtual disk. So it checks the servers for all the disks available and check the storage pool that can be used, right? This is the storage pool that I created. Next on that, CSV one. For the demo 6, so I just put 5 gig. So over here, you can see some configuration of two-way mirror, how this how big is the tiering space or the capacity tier for the fast tier? That can be configured when you have a lot of disks because I only have a single tier, so that's all I get with two-way mirror and capacity tier. After that, just create the virtual disk. Right, this is the disk I created, and 5 gig. Don't need the ladder because I'm going to make it as a cluster volume. CSV one. Next and create. So once this is done, right, just very simple to change it into the cluster shared volume, coming to the disk area, right? Just right click and add to a cluster shared volume. So this is what you usually do for the traditional storage. From here onwards, there's no perceivable difference between the SANs and the disk cluster shared volume. Other than that, it's a high performance volume. So from there, we have the space. We can, as usual, go to cluster storage, and you can see my new volume of 5 gig that I created. So there onwards, you can build all your VM folder and put all your VM data inside as usual. So that's how fast you can build a storage spaces foundations within 15 minutes or maybe less on stage, right? And from there, you can grow very quickly. So now, let me show the second demo. Let me go back to my slides. So the second demo that I want to show is software-defined networking. I'm coming from Peering One, and Peering One essentially is a cloud service provider. So we have multiple tenants coming to us. We are operating in what Azure would like to operate, right? So you will sign up a package with us and move a workload with us. So with software-defined networking, we are able to allow multi-tenant in the environment. And imagine that you as an end user or enterprise, you can segregate your network into a department base, or let's say even a user base, for example, HR user or finance user, right? This is traditional network where you have a core switch, right? You have edge router, you have spine network, you have firewalls all over the place to build all the resiliency and build all the firewall rule to protect your network. What we can do is create an overlay, right? On top of your physical infrastructure, we create an overlay network, right? This is what has been used in Azure, and we have Azure in your data center in 2016. So essentially what you get is a pane of a virtual network, right? And you build your services on top. You can have an internal virtual IP that is essentially the software load balancer. You can have NSG, where it's a network security group where you can set the policy. For example, file server connect to the web server with this single protocol, right? With this single network. Other than that, it's blocked. And this will able to work even in a single subnet, right? The traditional network, if you have a single subnet, your firewall cannot be blocked the traffic. But this will bring the security up to the VM level to ensure the maximum security for your tenant. No worries on that.
Sorry about that.
Right.
My bad.
And on top of that, you have the virtual appliance. If you can see on the top portion, this virtual appliance is a plug-in, right? You can do, for example, sniffing some networks to be able to see the data traffic through, or even put in some, for example, network analyzer to analyze the traffic across your AD to a file server and stuff like that. So being a storage-defined network, then you're able to make it agile, secure, in terms of multi-tenant perspective. So with software-defined network also, that we can extend your network to the cloud as hybrid cloud. So speaking of hybrid cloud, as Sonia shared, right, hybrid cloud is the next move way to enterprise. In fact, more than 80% of the enterprise having have some plan to move to the hybrid cloud. So I'll bring Noval up, right, as a role play on Shudder VM portions. Hi, Noval. So I heard that you would like to go for a hybrid cloud,
yes.
Right? And you have some workload you want to move to us.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so cool. So you have passed me the VM,
yes.
Right? And I have built up the virtual machines in my environment.
Awesome.
So this is essentially the portals that I'll be giving to Noval, and Noval will be able to see his VM running inside. So Web 1 and Web 2 is the virtual machines that Noval has given to me. And Noval can be using the self-service portal to console to the virtual machines. All right. Let me just try that again. All right. So using a self-service way, Noval can actually see his data. He can start updating the data, you know, right? Using all the self-service way. So Noval, appreciate that you move as a service provider to us, but I can see that your virtual machine is not that secure. It's not encrypted. Would you like to see something more?
Well, the thing is, we have always been taught that virtualization provides security, right? So why do we virtualize? It's not just about consolidating, but we expect security to be weaved into virtualization. But from the look of it, maybe it's not quite so. Right? Yes, please, show me how that I can make it more secure.
Yeah, sure. So what I show you this morning is how we can, what's the difference between encrypted and non-encrypted. So with a shielded VM, as you can see here, let's say I'm a malicious admin, right? And I have access to my Hyper-V that is running Noval's virtual machines. So what I did is I can right-click and connect to his web one. Right? I'm the service provider. I shouldn't have seen this, but I seen this. I saw that, hey, Noval got some data on D drive and he's put some confidential file there. So it's not that secure that as a service fabric admin, I'm able to see the screen. So if I were to show you what Shielded VM can do, right? It essentially tell me that I cannot see the console of your virtual machines. This virtual machine is shielded and it's only allowed Noval's, who is the righteous owner, to see his own data, right? So Noval, since this is a good feature, I think you would like to have it.
So absolutely.
I will guide you through a little bit on how you can self-service and provision these kind of virtual machines on their onwards.
Yes, please.
So again, we go back. Go back to the portal. It's very simple, Noval, right? You just click on the shielding data, right? You download the Guardian, all right? Then on top of that, you download the... Let me just cancel it because I have it. So you download the catalog for the template that I published to you, which is 2016. Okay. Once you have that, you just need to quickly use a tool that is built into 2016, which is called Shielding Data Wizard. Right? You can create a new shielded data. For example, you can say that this is a Noval IT department shielded data. Right? So you go through the process of the whole wizard with all the files you've downloaded, which is the Guardian and the catalog. From this wizard, you will generate a PDK file, right? You simply re-upload the PDK file to the portal. With that, you can have new virtual machines onwards today that you can click on, and you can click on this shielded icon. This is new,
awesome.
Right? Mm. That is ensures that your data is protected. So if you have a multiple department, for example, you can create one for your IT department, you can create one for your finance department, right?
Yep.
Then you can have different shielded encryption method for that particular VM, and only those users who have the rights to access the particular VM.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So finally, we have security with virtualization.
Yes.
Right, so what you're saying is without shielded VM, my data in the virtual machine is exposed to whoever has admin rights
exactly.
In the environment that I'm moving it to.
Exactly. That's what I have showcased this morning. And how I have showcased to you how we eliminate that as a service provider, as an enterprise.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
That great piece of 2016 has been allowed us to do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Rincon.
Okay. So with that, I'll pass back to the stage.
Thank you.
Thank you.